at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
8:51 this morning, we're turning our attention back to hurling. I'm delighted to say James Scahill is back with us. James, good morning to you. How are you?
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
You good. We planned this when we saw that it looked like Micheál Donoghue was out, but just when we thought he was out, they suck him back in. Examiner this morning reporting that he's not out of the running entirely for the Galway job. This is fast becoming as interesting a soap opera as the situation in Kerry. What's going to happen? Tell us what you think is going to happen.
I'll tell you what I think will happen and tell you what should happen. What I think will happen is that there's a possibility that a candidate might be rushed through in the next couple of weeks because they've set themselves a deadline. What I hope will happen and what should happen is that time should be taken by the interview committee or the interview panel, should I say, to work on relations with Micheál and try and get this appointment done. And if it takes 2 months, 3 months, so be it. But don't rush the appointment just for the sake of appointment. I know we had the county chairman coming out last week saying that the deadline was middle of October. There's no reason to put a deadline on a position as important as this. Like if you were nominating a manager for a club, you would carry out due diligence and make sure that the position was filled by the right person as opposed to the position being filled fast. So I would hope that time would be taken and everyone would come on the same board and essentially just try work with Micheál to get him back into position. But again, that's what should happen. What I think will happen is there's a couple of things here. I'm going to go into a bit deeper than this. Is that I was in the dressing room in 2017, let's say, in the final, and Micheál has a great vision, right? And he's the type of person who I would class as a great leader, right? And like great leaders will convince you can do great things. You know what I mean? They might be within your grasp, but he convinces you you can do them anyways. And he said in the dressing room after the game, after winning Ireland, he'd nearly forgotten about that Ireland we just won moments ago and was looking towards the future, trying to build. And he was aiming it at the players to up their game as best they could. But he was really throwing task at the board and trying to get them to implement, you know, connectivity for all teams and get going with player development and get joined up thinking and get on the same page so we can create like a Galway wave, as Joe Connolly used to call it. And that just didn't happen. You know what I mean? And I think what a big issue is that Micheál's ambition and his view for Galway as a whole is not being matched on the other side of the table. That's why I think he's kind of reluctant to come back into the position, because like his ambition is so grand. Like he envisages multiple Irelands for Galway. He envisages 13 and 14 year olds coming under Lux's wing and all a pathway getting towards the senior team, joined up thinking, collective thinking, and a pathway to success. But that's just, again, that's met with resistance, to be honest.
Why?
Why is a good question. I think the GEA as a whole, a certain GEA community, and especially people who are in the office positions, right, they're slow churners when it comes to change or when it comes to modernization. Like we've seen over the past couple of weeks, the debate with regards to the football proposals. And from a player perspective, the obvious thing is to go with the league type format, which is the best thing for everyone. But that's why I struggle to understand why people on the opposite side of the table are saying that the provincial championship is still perfect. But my point is, it's a slow churner. And it's like it takes forever for the GAA to inflict change, you know. And I just don't see anyone in Galway putting their head above the parapet to try and change things a small bit. Because, you know, this, yes, a vision is grand, it's great, but it takes finance. It takes a lot of work. It takes subcommittees. It takes, you know, huge fundraising and approaching people and asking for money and getting things going to get where you want to go. I just started to look at Tyrone to say how do they come on board, because they kind of, yes, they were in semi-finals, you know, but they weren't really serious contenders. And you look at the Tyrone team this year and what have they got behind them? And then I got looking a bit deeper and I saw Garvahy and I saw that facility was built for £7 million and it had, you know, 10 dressing rooms for women, and it was done with 200 members in Tyrone giving £5,000 each. Like that's colossal fundraising. That's huge thinking. You know what I mean? Huge thinking, grand thinking for something bigger for Tyrone, and then when they're Ireland this year. You know, I just think there's a bit of resistance because we're stuck in our ways a bit, and I think we're quite content as a Galway group. If we run off the club championship, everyone's happy in the clubs, we're all good. You know what I mean? I think if there's no drama in the club championship and it's run off, okay, that's considered a success, I think, in this country.
I don't really understand, like, all my life, the Galway hurlers have been gifted physically, the skill set has been there, the athleticism has been there, the bravery has been there. And like, I know you guys got over the line eventually, but it feels a little bit like you're one of those teams that left a couple behind you. And
Absolutely. The
conversation you're having with us now, the Limerick model is the model, isn't it? Like, yeah, that's the joined up thinking. That's the, and it goes back to the investment and the money, and fair enough. But like, every county has access to these funds if they go and ask for them, and if they shake the tree in the right way, and if they have a visionary like Micheál Donoghue would say to local businesses, this is what's going to happen to our community if we invest properly. Here's where your money's going to go. I'm going to make sure that every pound, shilling and pence is accounted for. And yeah, and this is the potential that we have within us, particularly given the tradition that Galway hurling has. Like, I don't know, that like, I think back to Aina Ryan and how the hair would stand up in the back of your neck when he was getting it. I think back to Joe Cooney. Like, that's your tradition. You guys own that. That's an unbelievably powerful elixir.
Correct. It's the tradition in Galway is huge. Like, I grew up hearing about stories about specifically Tony Keating and Aina Ryan because my mother is from Clamardaley, and I heard, and they became two heroes of mine, I say. And you look at those guys and you say, right, I want to continue that. Like, when I came out of minor, we won a couple of minors, and I thought, geez, I'm going to win five at Ireland's here handed, because we're so good at minor level in 21s that it's just a matter of time before all this is put together at senior. And God, I got some shock. Like, and like, to get one out of 14 years, I count myself as a lucky duck, right? When you consider that we went up against good teams, yes, but we left some behind us. And there was instances like going off the pitch that, you know, and even deeper off the pitch that didn't help us in any way, shape or form. And I think at the county, and like, I struggle at times, and I get a bit upset and a bit angry, and I get a bit wound up, to say, when I start talking about it, because there's such passion inside in Galway to try and get success, you know. And I just don't think that's reflected, you know, at board level, if I'm honest. As I said to you, I might keep repeating myself here, right? But I think if the club championship goes off well, everybody's happy in Galway. And like, I was looking at the committee, there's 22 members in that board committee, and you can be sure come December they'll all move around, you know. This lad goes to that position, that lad goes to that position, and all the same top tier will remain in the same position, and there'll be no change in picture. That's why I heard rumours recently of a local businessman, Mick Culhane, who went up a couple of years ago to run for the chairmanship and wasn't successful, but he's interested again. And like, if he was interested, he'd be the type of person who, again, would have a grand thinking. Like, he ran a very, very successful international business, would have a good means to an end, say, and I think his vision would match that of what the players and management would be. So you need someone like that who's going to stick their head above the parapet and really inflict change across the board. And that's going to be, it's going to be tough to do, because you see anything that the GAA has done in history, you take, let me give you an example, Sean Kelly with Rule 42, he got a lot of ridicule for that, you know what I mean? But he put his head above the parapet, and now his class is a great decision looking back with hindsight. And I just think that someone came in like Mick Culhane, came on board, got a whole host of business people around him in from a financial perspective, because a lot of the games nowadays are driven by finance. I think I won't say it's well publicised, but in inner circles, it's well documented that Tineo gave Tipperary in the region of €1 million, let's say, at the time they won the Ireland 19. And that's the scale we're at. You know, we're not like, and don't get me wrong, I'm not underappreciating what people give in the couple hundred thousand, let's say, for main sponsorship. But, and again, it's going to sound a bit, you know, a bit ridiculous in one sense, but it's just not enough in today's game. And it's not going to the players. It's just putting all the infrastructure in place and putting all the basics in place for a team to thrive. Like, you consider Micheál, and I don't know if you like me saying this, but Micheál and his managed team over the course of their tenure raised in the region of €500,000 themselves, just themselves, to try and fund, you know, their team and fund their ambition, you could say. Look, and again, you might think I'm going around the house a small bit here, but to go back to the issue at hand is the manager. And for me, it's Micheál as the manager. And I think the players would, as from what I gather, would like and would really be excited for Micheál to go back again, because they know they're getting a real, you know, they're getting a CEO of a business who's going in to run this thing. You know what I mean? And it's just, I think every effort should be made to go back and mend relations or inflict the changes needed in order to get that man back as manager.
When you talk about that lack of a willingness to put one's head above the parapet in relation to the Galway County Board, was that something that you were acutely aware of as a playing group in 2015 when you come close to taking strike action? You knew that something drastic had to be done in order to make decisions at county board level.
I think we were a very strong group back then. Like, I'm not saying the group now aren't strong, but just when I had experience of it back then, we were a very strong group. I think we had people inside in that group as the players who could who, if they wanted it, would be very politically based and would be able to debate well and carry themselves well. And I won't say take on people, but at least hold themselves really well, you know, in getting their views across and their point across. And there was, the strike was no problem. That was going to be a full-on strike. And what the board said to us that time, and this is the truth, it's not made up, was that we don't want player power. And that phrase gets on my nerves, because that wasn't player power. That was just, again, like a bit dire few ladies, you know, the ladies soccer team, that there needs to be change, let's say, in order to get what they need to thrive. And like, we understood at the time that the setup that we were involved in was not good enough. It wasn't sufficient to challenge the big teams. So we wanted change, and we were prepared to do essentially anything, you could say. It goes as far as mediation, as far as you want to go, in order to get change. And eventually, we got not what we wanted, but what we needed, and then we got to Ireland. And I don't know, if something as drastic as that is to happen right now, you know what I mean? I myself, coming from a very staunch background, let's say, in my beliefs, in the sense that Michael is the man, I'd go for it. You know, I would just stand down and make sure that he comes back on board as the manager, you know. And like we met it when he stood down a couple of years ago, it's for the same reasons. But the same reasons he won't come back now, or is reluctant somewhat to come back, are the same reasons as the reason he stood down. It's not family, because, you know, the team, when someone walks away from a county team, or someone walks away from a position, is, oh, it's family or work reasons. Everyone has given up something. Every player has given up something. The physio has given up something. Everyone's given up a minor bit of themselves to be in that position. And 9 times out of 10, the family is the large percentage of that, right? So I don't think that's an issue. That's going to happen. I think what the issue was that he really wanted to explore Galway and make it a grander thing than what it was. And we were kind of stagnant. And that's where I feel we're at the minute. Right now, we're really, really stagnant. And as much as I hate to say it, guys, I feel like Galway are right back square one where we were in 2015.
Can I ask you then about that conversation when he comes and tells you as a group that he's reached a point of frustration, that the stagnation is what the future is going to be, even if he continues. What's that conversation like with you guys? Is it like
difficult. We're obviously all in the room, and like, it's a rarity. Like if you see grown men cry, let's say, it's usually down to success for achieving something huge. You know what I mean? Or if you see grown men cry in a team environment, it's because you're after suffering a devastating loss. You know what I mean? And I was in that room, let's say, and there was multiple lads crying, because we understood what we were losing. That's why we all came together as a player group and, you know, tried to fight to keep him. But there was no appetite whatsoever to change on the other side of the table. You know, no appetite whatsoever. And then Michal, ultimately, I think it's a bit like when you shake a Coke bottle and open the cap, you know what I mean? He just had enough, you know what I mean? Because I'd say it was just a constant battle to try to get better standards, get better infrastructure, you know, try to get head of athletic development and get grouped up thinking amongst all the managers and all the teams, as opposed to being so fractious and so singular minded. You know what I mean? There's a very individualistic mind amongst some of the managers, that say, across the board, in terms of grouped up thinking. And that's itself is tough to handle as a senior manager when you're trying to get, you know, buy-in from other managers who are feeding your team as well with the youth, you know. Very tough conversation, a ridiculous conversation, in the sense that it caught us off guard at the time, and like we're after coming back off the back of a difficult season that was, you know, that was all noted, and we were kind of looking forward to really hammering home a new season, and that didn't transpire. So I just think it's been time lost, time we'll never get back again.
Can you explain that timeline of events, James? Like, so Michal Donoghue says he's had enough, he's leaving, and then you mentioned there that you guys made representations on behalf of Michal Donoghue.
So the first thing is kind of damage limitations. Okay, how do we stop this from happening? How do we stop this knee-jerk reaction and make sure Michal and all the management team just pause for a second and come back? So there was like a week there of conversations with management and with members of management to try and just kind of stop their decision and think and come back, you know, and just we'll fix this, right? So commit, come back, and we can fix it later. And that kind of, I think what players, we weren't privy to information or privy to instances throughout his tenure that he would have seen. We obviously didn't bring it to our attention, but I think it got to melting point. So that was the first week. And then us as a group would have met, like any team does this, like they would have met collectively a few times and trying to hammer out, how can we fix these issues? How can we approach the board and try and mend all this, somewhat act as a, you know, somewhat of a mediation position? And then it just got messy. It became a he said, she said, you did, I did, and it became a real political battle. And for a finish, Michal was just tired of it and said, no, go, like, we just have to stop. And then players themselves got got a touch tired of it, and we kind of accepted that Michal wasn't going to come back. Hence, a new line or new path had to be walked. But that was probably a 2 or 3 or 4 week process, even though that was difficult. And it was a lot of meetings in house amongst players, a lot of discussion, a lot of debate, a lot of deliberation over certain people and their positions, and how can we, you know, how can we impact change ourselves? And ultimately, we had to go with the direction of the board and find a new manager.
Did that have an impact on the playing group and their relationship with the board? And were any of you concerned about your own playing role as a result of being seen as leaders or ringleaders of the movement to keep him?
Yeah. Well, going back to the 2015 time, just for a second, there was the Super Six, we call it, let's say, in the sense that there were six lads that the previous manager had identified as the ringleaders. And he was so far wrong in terms of who the six guys were. First of all, ironing out six people as the ringleaders was just, and I was one of those guys, you know. And like, I don't give a shit. Like, if a new manager comes in and puts in a good setup and I'm dropped, that's fine. It takes, you know, that's not a selfish mindset. That's a collective mindset for us all to thrive. And bear in mind, I'm not on the team. I retired. I'm finished for this forthcoming year. So like, from a playing perspective, nothing to do with me. I just want to see my club mates, my county mates, and the youth coming up into a very high thriving position under a good manager. That's what I want. Whether I'm going to get it or not, or we're going to get it, it remains to be seen. So, and again, players aren't contracted. We have no contracts that we can sit in the sideline, pretend to be injured, right? We can be dropped in an instant. You know, again, like there's guys, real good, like teammates that I've played for before. When a new manager comes in, he drops 10 guys in an instant and doesn't give them a chance to, you know, walk away themselves. But that's a different story entirely. So there was no, I was never afraid of any kind of ramifications from a board or from management. I was willing to accept that. But you can be sure that there are players, right? And it's the same in every group. It's the same in every business environment, every group setting across the board, that they will look at themselves first. They'll look for I suppose, self-sufficiency for themselves to survive, and then they look at the group next. But I think in the Galway team at the minute, in terms of players, it's overwhelmingly group first, overwhelmingly. There might be one or two, let's say, that's unbeknownst to me at the minute, but it's overwhelmingly the group ethos is group first and individual second, you know.
The potential at the moment, and there are various names out there. Davy Fitt's name is not going to go forward, not going to be allowed to be put forward if Micheál Donoghue is in for the job. But there's a possibility Micheál Donoghue isn't in for the job, and some of the clubs might nominate Davy. Is that still a possibility in your view? Is it possible that next season Davy Fitt is actually the Galway manager?
Look, when you're talking about Galway, like, anything is possible. He himself came out and said he wasn't interested in the job, publicly said it, right? But saying it publicly is one thing, but then the inner workings of phone calls and meetings is another thing. And I don't know what club has nominated him on the back of what, probably just what he's done in the past, but from, as I said before, and it's well documented, and people have said it to me, whether in a positive or negative light, that they think I don't like David Fitz. It's not that I don't like them. Like, personally, has nothing to do with them. It's the business side of this, let's say, and it's his actual ethos in training a team that I don't agree with, and it's not suitable for Galway. So is there a possibility? Probably a 5% chance. Is it going to turn to reality? I would say no. I just don't think he'll be well accepted amongst the players, as I said to you before. I just think that's more media, newspapers trying to fill some column inches and trying to drive a bit of hysteria around the whole position. I think it's down, realistically speaking, to 3 in-house Galway people, and well, maybe now even 2 at the moment, in terms of, in my opinion, it's Micheál. He should be, again, hounded to take the job, but also he should be approached in a very civil manner and a politically correct manner, and trying to get some of his thinking and some of his, as I say, a pathway to success implemented for him to come back. There's him, and there's also probably the possibility of the Trinity manager, I'd say, Jeffrey Linsky, who, again, it's not been stated publicly because the names haven't been released. It's only because it's the inner workings, inner circles that you hear these things. But in reality, the only 2 options at the minute are Micheál and Jeffrey. And I think Micheál is the clear winner in terms of record and in terms of, you know, approachability amongst players and management, etc. So to answer your question, that was a roundabout answer. I apologise.
No, it's perfect.
I don't think it's going to be running for David Fitz in Galway.
Okay.
Sorry, go for it.
No, you go on.
I just kind of have, like, beyond the managers, it's kind of like this kind of theme that's come up during this conversation, James, this sort of wider conversation about Galway and how they actually reach their potential. Like, Micheál Donoghue sounds like a phenomenal manager, but from what you're saying, getting the right managerial appointment now isn't going to fix all the issues in Galway. And it just kind of came into my head the other day about the strikes in Limerick around the turn of the decade. And had that not led to radical enough change within the county, there's a chance Limerick, with their golden generation, would have won in All-Ireland, and there would have been that level of contentment. But we never would have known how great this Kian Lynch era would have become, the possibility of matching that Kilkenny team. Like, is that overstating the level of importance that a county board and the systems in place can actually have on the success of a team? And is there a level of regret that you have looking at what's happened with Galway?
I have a massive level of regret, because again, it was my own time playing that I think we should have won more, and we left games behind us. And every like the cynic will look at the player and blame the player, but it's a much deeper issue than that. Like, it's a far greater collective that puts the player onto the pitch. You know, that all the preparation was into, like, the 95% of the whole year was preparation, 5% is playing, even less. You know what I mean? And it's a lot deeper than that. And you know, it's the small things, like when you consider strike action is severe. Yes, it's severe, right? But it's necessary. And like, I know in terms of change, I know she stepped down, but Tracy Kennedy in Cork did good work in Cork. I look at Michael Deignan. Like, Michael Deignan was heavily challenged for the chairmanship, let's say, or he heavily challenged for the chairmanship in Offaly. And now there's a buzz about Offaly because he's putting a focus and he's putting a bit of eclectic thinking into Offaly. And now there's a buzz on both sides of the ball, small ball and big ball, if you know what I mean, in terms of them winning. So that's kind of what goes. They need a figurehead who's a public figurehead and who can approach each club, you know, individually without any baggage and look to go forward. You know what I mean? Like, just Galway's a bit, there's bits of Galway that are rotten, if I'm honest, right? I know firsthand of a delegate who went into a convention and went against the wishes of his club and put down the opposite name of a candidate for chairmanship. You know what I mean? He was given clear direction to put down name B, and he went in himself on a soul, on a tangent, to put down name A because it treats himself as an individual. He probably got a ticket to a game, or probably got some sort of promise, and then he put his vote sideways. He went to win against the wishes of a club, and went on a tangent. That kind of instance, right, is across the board. It's absolutely across the board. It's a political game in Galway, in the sense that there'll be promises made, and they won't be fulfilled. You know, but however, once the roles are maintained and all the cronyism is maintained, everybody's happy, then, let's say, and then clubs and people and players and supporters are effectively powerless.
You must be getting close to the level where you're thinking, I have to get involved at that level. Like, I know it's kind of signing up for a life in purgatory.
I do. Look, sir, I'm not interrupting your question. The last time I spoke with you, I touched on Galway, and I had a couple of people approach me face to face, fair play, and that's what I prefer, face to face, and say, why don't you do something about it? And I'm saying, I will, in time. You know, I'm 33, I'm still playing, I have a young family. In fairness, I don't have probably the time or the real energy focus. My focus is on two small kids and playing myself. But in a few years' time, absolutely, I'm going in some shape or form, whether that be into a coaching capacity for an underage team or as a facilitator to a senior team, or into some sort of chairmanship, my own club, something like that. But I can tell you here now for sure, I will be getting into it. You know, and maybe I'm a bit strong-minded, and maybe I don't have the same savviness as some guys that, like, if I want change, I want it now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I want it now, and I can't see the reason as to why it can't happen now. Maybe that affects me or impacts me because, again, as I said, GA in inputting change is a bit of a slower turner, so I might be social. But to answer your question, yes, it's in my mind. Is it at the forefront of my mind? No, it's not. It's at the back of my mind for a few years yet.
33 is not too old to make a comeback.
I hope my wife isn't listening, but if I did, I think I'd be divorced. Yeah. I think I'd be divorced, yeah.
Well, we don't want that. James, it's been brilliant as ever chatting to you. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Okay, guys, see.
It's James Gale there. Always brilliant stuff. And like, that potential that's right there, if you look back at their underage success and the quality of hurler that they've produced. And again, it's not one type of hurler. They don't just produce halfbacks. They produce free scoring forwards and have done, and they produce small nippy corner forwards and giant of men who can play full forward or centre forward. They had some of the best halfbacks that we've ever seen, and I don't know, there's something there. There's like a Limerick level of quality of player coming through in groups, but it's really interesting to hear somebody who's been on the inside who feels that they underachieved saying that we underachieved and this is why we underachieved.
Because that was certainly the theory maybe going into the 19 season. I know Limerick don't end up winning it, but there was a sense that if they were and they were favourites, that Galway would be the team to take them down. And I wonder, have we actually just missed out on a great Limerick-Galway rivalry?
Oh, we saw bits of it. We definitely saw bits of it. Like, maybe it's not over.
Hi, at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.